One Panther Podcast. John Ellis.
We got our good buddy Luther Broughton here, former Carolina Panther, former Philadelphia Eagle. He is one of the kindest gentlemen to ever put on a football uniform for either team. A very good football player in his own right. Luther, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me.
So, obviously, we got a lot to talk about here. You played for the Panthers. You've been through this situation to a certain degree with a coach of yours. Talk about Ron Rivera. Let's get right down to it.
Ron came here in, 2011? Took this team to a Super Bowl. We had two wins the year before. Brought a different culture here. Ron is such a really, really good person, people person. Ron was a linebackers coach when I was a rookie with the Eagles. Mm-hmm. And all I can remember is how nice this guy is. Like, I know people say it all the time, but he was really genuine, and people really liked him, gravitated to him. And he was like that with everybody, man. So I was happy to see him get hired, and I knew he'd do a good job. But let's talk about the firing, right? So let's go back to last year when we were 6-2, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Cam Newton hurt his shoulder. He didn't just kind of hurt his shoulder. Cam was injured. There's a difference between being hurt and being injured. When you're injured, you shouldn't play. I think the biggest mistake Ron made last year or the team made last year was not immediately putting Cam on IR. A healthy quarterback is better than an injured Cam, no matter who it was. And I think we either would have won more games last year with a healthy quarterback, or Ron would have gotten more of a mulligan. Because he didn't play, his starter played the entire season almost. Even though he was injured, he played. So he should have got, I think he should have gone on IR, had surgery, and been ready early. So let's go to the offseason, right? So he did come back. His shoulder looked healthy. He hurt something else, which was rare. A Lisfranc injury is not common. And when that happened, I knew he was done. You just don't come back from a Lisfranc. It's not a sprained ankle. It's not a sprain. You just don't come back from that.
Have you ever dealt with that personally, or know a teammate of yours that's gone through it?
Deuce Staley had that injury in Philly. Deuce had surgery, and Deuce was done for the season. And it was scary because at that point, when guys had that injury, their careers were likely over. Now, with medical technology, it's gotten better and better. But you remember Eric Rett?
Yeah.
Definitely. Eric Rett had that injury, and that ruined his career. And, you know, it happens, right?
It does.
So now Cam is out, but we still showed some fight. But we've had a tough time in the past few weeks, losing close games we probably should have won. And then here comes the stinker against the Redskins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know Tepper is going to probably eventually – piss on his carpet. He's going to mark his territory at some point, and I wish he had just done it in the offseason. You know he wants his own people. I wish he had done it in the offseason as opposed to now, but his reasoning, he says that he didn't want to be like he was going behind Ron's back looking for coaches because he probably had made up his mind he was going to fire Ron at the end of the year. I still hate it.
It was a tricky situation to deal with from the start because you've got a new owner, a coach that the owner had no connection to whatsoever. Changes inside the front office. There's an analytics piece that's starting to sneak into the front office. Ron's status was so tied to Cam's status for so long. When that happened, some of the things that happened last year, had Cam been healthy, they may not have won those games. The secondary breakdowns there against Cleveland, against Seattle. Cam did all he could in those games with what he was dealing with.
Correct.
There were some deep issues with that defense over the last 2 years. Last season, it was giving up the deep ball. This season, it's the new gap control defense, and they're not stopping the run. And it's just
they're not stopping
killing.
The run.
It's so killing their season.
People, like, when you have a guy that's well-liked and he gets fired, people are going to have a lot of opinions and feelings about it.
Yeah, sure.
But here's the thing, man. This is the NFL, bro.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to get fired. Good people are going to get fired. People are going to get fired with long tenures, and you feel like, oh, there's no better coach on the outside. Sometimes it's time to make a change. So even whether you agree with it or not, sometimes a change needs to be made. Prime example, bro. Prime example. Look at Philadelphia. Do you think Chip Kelly is a better coach than Andy Reid? I don't think anybody thinks that.
No,
right?
Of course not.
But it was time to make a change in Philadelphia.
That was 14 years for Andy. That was 99 to 2012. That was 14 seasons. And that 14 last year,
seasons for Big Red.
I can remember. You probably missed this game, the Monday night game where Cam was just running all over that defense in Philadelphia. Yep. And they looked completely lost as a football team. And some of these coaches Carolina has had over the years have some good bona fides. Even Seifert, who I know you had some issues with, everybody did at one point. He had his bona fides. But at the end these tenures,
he didn't have any bona fides here. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly.
Andy was bona fide in Philadelphia.
Right.
But exactly. And Andy still is. Look at Andy now.
Yep.
Right? I mean, would Philadelphia want Andy as their head coach now? Mm-hmm. Probably. You know, I'm not pissing on Doug, but probably you would want Andy. But
I would think at this point, I mean, we've had this conversation in the preseason. We brought up the Carson Wentz, Nick Foles thing, but I think the bigger thing to look at is the Frank Reich, Doug Peterson dynamic. Right. I'm not so sure if Reich didn't have a bigger part in, at least an equal part of what happened with that offense that year with developing Foles than Peterson himself.
Yeah, Frank is a really good coach.
Yeah.
And those guys together were awesome.
Yeah.
Those guys together were awesome. Now, those guys apart now, you know, Philly's had their issues. Part of it has to do with injuries or whatnot, not making excuses. That's a big part of it right now.
Typical Philly guy here. Look at typical Philly guy here making excuses.
No excuses. you can't lose to the Dolphins. You can't lose to Atlanta because you can't catch the ball. You can't lose to Detroit because you can't catch the ball. No excuses.
When you combine
that with injuries, you don't overcome. You overcome that maybe when you're healthy and you got your guys, right? You can overcome bad play. Like right now, your bad play is not being overcome.
No.
So,
and it's always a game of inches, too. It's a game of inches with Carolina. You know, you're looking at 3 or 4 goal line stands. It's the difference between, you know, a 6-win, 5-win team, maybe a 9-win team, even with Kyle Allen in the mix, who, you know, I have tepid feelings about his game. Decent here, not so good there. He's your backup. He's a UDFA backup. You're asking him to do way too much. 46 passes a game is entirely way too much. Yeah.
But the point
to that would be Philadelphia is facing some of the same stuff right now. I mean, look at the game against the Patriots. I mean, it's just little things that happen.
And you can't win that way.
You can't.
And that's what I'm saying. It's no excuses. It's reasoning. You can't win that way. But let's get back to Carolina. Of course, I jumped to Philly, right? Let's get back to Carolina. It's tough to see Ron get moved out. But Tepper bought the team for $2.3 billion.
Mm-hmm.
He wants his own people. He has a right to get his own people. Mm-hmm. And if he felt like Ron wasn't doing the job the way he wanted to do it, he should make a move.
Right.
Whether you like it or not. And for me, I really like Ron. I'm sitting here trying to justify it because I really like Ron.
Yeah.
But listen, the Panthers started 6-2 last year. They finished the season 7-9, right?
Yeah. Right.
Right. That's a 1-7 ending.
And Luther, like we told you, some of that was on Cam's shoulder, but not all of it.
Some of that was on Cam's shoulder, but not all of it.
Clock mismanagement. You had the personnel, you know, gaps, and then you got the secondary and no pass rush last year. And then they fixed that problem. And then again, I'd like to get your thoughts on this when you get past your next point, the switch to the new alignment defensively. Where, in my view, you played the game. You know a lot more about film study and how to break these things down. But for my view, from my high school elementary level looking at it, it takes Kuechly and Thompson and eliminates their strengths.
Their strength,
Wipes them right out of a play.
Yeah, it's odd seeing them go to that when they have those speed linebackers, linebackers.
Right, when you need to win now as a coach, which makes me believe maybe that's a Tepper idea. Maybe, hey, we're going to keep you around one more year, but you better come up with something pretty exotic on defense or you're gone. And he just threw something against the wall. A lot of people told me that, and here's what I got to that. I said, Ron's a very, very thorough guy. He takes tremendous pride in his defensive schematics. I highly doubt he would keep moving forward if that was the case. But in any event, it's hard that you're right. It's hard to see a coach get fired. Yesterday was very moving, I thought, because he's been here since the beginning for camp. I covered their first training camp right here in Spartanburg 2011. And it was very interesting to see those guys work together because they had no OTAs. That was the, you know, labor strife year. They had very limited, you know, interaction before they got to Spartanburg. And then right off the bat, you know, they were getting some things done. Chudzinski was the offensive coordinator. Cam wasn't getting a lot of reps early on, but they kept working him in. And Ron did a good job of galvanizing that group. I mean, you're talking about a team that won two games the year before, no OTAs, no offseason program, limited camp, and they improved by four games. Right. People don't look at things like that. They say, oh, 6-10 sucks. Well, now you got to look a little deeper. That John Fox team from 10, you know, he had to get coached at 6-7 quarterbacks, I think, at one point season.
That was a disastrous year. That was last year here. It was
a mess. 2001. Let's talk about that again. Yeah, that was.
Oh, 1 year. Good gosh. I'm still aging from that year.
I told, you know, Bill Rosinski was asking about that on Twitter the other day. He said, you talked to Luther on your podcast about it. And he said, what did he say? It said, Luther said that season felt like it lasted 40 years.
Dude, it was like, here's the thing. We were like the Chargers. We were in every game. We were losing games at that point that year. And I say paraphrasing. I can't exactly remember, but I'm almost certain we lost an NFL record number of games by 8 points or less. At that point, it was a record. And we just didn't have good quarterback play, not slamming the guys that played quarterback. They were young. We drafted Winky. Winky was a rookie. We had, like, Matt Lytle, Damian Craig.
I remember the Matt Lytle game. I remember that one.
Seifert Jettison, Burline, for whatever reason.
I want to get your thoughts on that. Hold up real quick. All right, so the Burline thing. I've been following this team for a long time. Give me the honest to God 411 on what the Burline deal was all about. Was that team constructed well enough for Burline to take them places in 2001, in your opinion?
Dude, we lost 8 games or something like that by 8 or 7 points or less.
I get that.
Quarterback play. There's no question with Steve Burline, we win at least 6 of those games. Dude, George was an asshole, man.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Man. Well, yeah, you talked about that last week.
I just couldn't believe how arrogant he was, man. And I'm not saying he was arrogant towards me. Whatever. I'm a backup tight end, nobody, whatever. He was just that way to everybody. Apparently, they celebrated when they paid him his $6 million to leave upstairs.
That's crazy. Was that a young team in 2001 on paper, do you think?
We were pretty young. We were playing young guys at important positions.
I mean, I'm not saying this means everything. You know, you look at a guy like Fox versus Seifert. It's night and day in terms of sideline interaction. You know, those things to me feel like they matter. You played. I don't know if they do or not.
They matter.
Thank you.
So put it
Twitter,
like this.
Hello, Twitter. Thank you.
A player
who played in the NFL agrees.
Dude, our team in Philadelphia. That first year, we weren't very good when I got traded back when McNabb was a rookie. Dude, we all got along. We all talked. We all communicated. We liked each other. We didn't feel like Andy Reid looked down on us.
And it all starts at the top because Reid sets that tempo.
At the top. top.
To me, it sounds like you've got it just, and I don't want to slander George Seaver here, but it sounds like you've got somebody in that seat who has a more negative, pessimistic approach, maybe just disjointed, but there's no plan behind it. There's not like a second guy in charge there, it doesn't seem like, that takes the reins and says, you know, I'm the guy that motivates. George is going to stay to himself and blow into lifesavers and do the quirky things he does. Right. To what you told me last time, he basically wanted to chew out assistants and players left and right, stay distant, and not delegate a damn thing. So when things went wrong, he would jump in on the sidelines, but mind you, with no headset, Lou.
I remember we were in, I told you we talked about this last podcast. We talked about this on a call, just a random call. We were in the huddle in Buffalo, and he took over and called a play for personnel that wasn't even close to what was in the game. And it was like, it was the fourth quarter driving to win.
Another close game.
I remember it was Moose. I think it was Moose. Moose looked over. We both looked at each other because we both knew that wasn't the personnel. And then all of a sudden, I think it was Burlock. No, it wasn't Burlock. I forgot who the QB was. Just backed out and took a timeout. And we were like, what the hell?
God almighty.
But he would do that to, God, I cannot remember our offensive coordinator. Gil. He would do that to Gil. Gil Haskell.
Yeah, Haskell. He was do a that gym, by the way. He was a hell of a coach. Moving forward, it feels early to start talking about these coaches. But here's what I'll say about what Tepper has done. And nobody knows the thought process because nobody's in the building that is talking about it in the media to the extent that, you know.
Everybody has all these opinions. It's theories. Everything.
Just
you
because
don't
they
know Jack.
Just because
let
they
it
fired
go.
Him
it's
out,
his team. Right.
Just because they fired him right now doesn't necessarily mean he's going to the college game for a coach. Now, theoretically, it would make sense because you get a bit of a jump on that. And that leads me to my next question, Luther. Jim Harbaugh, would you?
I would. Jim Harbaugh is a really good NFL coach. I don't care what they say about Michigan. Actually, he's doing at Michigan what Michigan has done for years and years and years. Is he's good. So people act like Michigan is this program that's been winning championships after championship. They don't win championships. When's their last championship?
Exactly.
Was it in like 92 with Brian Griese? And what about before that?
They had a let me just while you're talking about that, there was a litany of losing seasons before he came on board the decade before.
Right.
The 3 years prior to Harbaugh's arrival, 20-18. All right. Since then, 47-17.
And that's what I'm saying. Look, he hasn't won a championship. Oh. He hadn't gotten to the playoffs, but they won a championship in 36. 1936, and then they claim 11 national championships, which is great. But the last one was they claim a national title 01, 02, 03, 04, right? Mm-hmm. I'm Googling 1918, 1923, 32, 33, 47, and 48.
Mm-hmm.
Then,
oh, God,
in 1995. I mean, 1997.
Yep.
1997. I'm sorry.
Desmond Howard, right?
No, that was
Desmond
Brian
was
Greasy.
Before then. Yeah, Brian
Desmond
Greasy,
was
right?
Before that,
Des was 95.
So they're acting like Michigan is just some program that's winning championships, and Harbaugh
bullshit.
Is doing them a disservice.
Well, and that's a no-win situation for Jim because you know he comes in there and Ohio State, it's a competitive rivalry, but then again, it's not.
It's so not.
You're not really set up to succeed at all from an expectations because Harbaugh brings a lot of, you know, pizzazz to wherever he goes because he's very vocal and he's very, you know, outgoing and he's very forthright. And sometimes he can be a little quick with the media. But I'm telling
he's
you right now,
you look
at every stop he's made since Stanford. Every time
and
he
wins.
He makes them better.
John
he makes them
wins.
Better.
He makes them better.
He makes them better. Look at San Francisco. It's a disaster. And the only reason he's still not there right now winning division titles is Trent Baalke got into a pissing contest with him, and Baalke won. And then
that's the only reason.
The only
and
reason.
They,
he was a
and then they hired
he took Alex Smith and a unknown Colin Kaepernick commodity, which ended up being a pretty decent commodity, to correct, three straight conference championships, to a Super Bowl, and had big fourth quarter rallies in a title game and the Super Bowl. He's a hell of a coach. He knows how to put together the right staff. Again, I don't want to sound like I'm beating the drum and I'm a Jim Harbaugh stan here, but I'm looking at some of the other names. People would throw out, you know, these mid-level coordinators and like glorified quarterback coaches out there. That it just doesn't seem to me to be the way to go. I know the trend would be go offensive, but what Tepper said yesterday struck me. He said he wants to mix new age analytics with old school power. And I'm paraphrasing there, but that's kind of what Harbaugh would bring.
Right. I would love Harbaugh here. I mean,
what do you think from a standpoint of the roster right now? You look at some of the guys that are starting to move along here in age here. Olsen is more than likely going to be out the door in a couple of years and maybe even in the Monday Night Football booth. Cam's status is, you know, people are making a lot about Cam. We just don't know enough to really put the verdict down.
It's so funny that people want to dump a guy who was in the MVP conversation last year when he was healthy.
And they're dumping him for the wrong reasons. You know what they say, Lou? It's lazy narrative, and it pushed down from ESPN and those guys. It's, the wear and tear, and you can't trust him to stay healthy.
Those were freak
injuries, Lou. Freak injuries.
Oh, and they want to talk about the way he dresses. Who gives a bleep?
Oh, God, don't even. Like,
you
Jesus
know what?
Christ.
If you want to be a jokester and make jokes about it, which is fine. I clown people all the time. I clown myself. But come on, that has not. You would hear Jason Whitlock and those guys. Oh, he doesn't want to be a leader. He wants to be a fashion guy. Oh my
God!
Are you kidding me?
Click whores, man.
Me?
They're just click jockeys. They're click jockeys.
I'm so
they're looking
sick
for clicks.
Of those guys.
Those guys, you know, in particular. It's like I asked the folks on Twitter last night because I honestly during the Kyle Allen process, I was trying to just study film and do some analysis. And in the offseason, he put together pretty good tape. It was against the backups. But again, I felt the guy could contribute. And then they come at me like Kyle Allen. My camp report was, okay, he's the clear number two because Greer is not ready yet. That's where we're at. He gets the start. He blows the door off. And then I get criticized because, you're the Ford F-150 club. I'm like, yo, fuck
what,
you.
That's what happens. Thank you. Say it again. Fuck you. That's what happens. And people go for the first click and they think they're correct after one game. You know what's the most annoying thing out there for me? I know this is random as hell.
That's fine.
After week two, people putting out their MVP candidates.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
People in basketball are talking about who's the leading candidate for MVP right
Unbelievable.
Now.
Unbelievable.
Are
right.
you kidding
right.
me? They started talking about NFL MVP in week two. They take one game and go MVP. On the flip side, they take one game and a guy is a bust. It is incredible.
Yeah. So I went on Twitter on a rage last night, and I pulled up three all-22 pieces of tape for the three injuries he had. The shoulder in 2016 where he chased down the interception and the guy knocked him on the shoulder. The T.J. Watt in the pocket, and then the stumble, you know, the turf eating his foot in New England in the pocket. Two of those three things happened in the pocket. Around, making good plays.
It's always in the pocket.
And he's very cautious about his body out in the open field. They say he doesn't slide. Well, he tumbles down, and no one's going to land on him. If you're playing, you know, Atlanta or Denver, that's going to happen.
Of his big hits are in the pocket.
In the fucking pocket.
Like scrambling out, trying to make a pass in the pocket.
Right.
And it is amazing, the narrative. It's like, no. Tell me this. Why do other quarterbacks get hurt? Look, who's a quarterback that's injured a lot?
Carson Wentz was hurt at one point.
Thank you!
Ben Roethlisberger. There's another guy who's always hurt. There you go.
And those are guys that extend plays and get hurt in the pocket. Now, Carson got hit diving into the end zone trying to score, and his knee buckled before he got hit.
Yeah.
Carson takes chances, and you know, they get on him for not sliding. But quarterbacks are going to get hit. That's why there's so many rules.
And just for a second here, let's acknowledge the fact that for him, the entirety of his career, Cam Newton has been a 6'6", 250-pound defensive end playing quarterback.
Playing quarterback.
They're scared of him. Luther, there was a play against Atlanta. You remember the slam dunk. You know, he goes over the pylon, and he slam dunks the ball down on Trufant. None of those DBs, they literally backpedaled, Lou. They wanted none of that.
They wanted none of that.
And that's tremendously rare for any player, but the quarterback, for God's sakes. And he can still throw a dime on a post route, too. So just the complete package. Yeah, I'm looking at it. I'm saying, Luther, and you may have a counter opinion to this. Doesn't sound like you do. And you played the game, so I trust you more than 99% of these ass clowns out there. They're our hot taken out their rear end.
Oh, my God. The
injuries to me, he's 30 years old. He's not 47 years old. He's not limping around like a grandfather. One thing I'd say is this. Where's Cam's head at personally? Does he want to continue to play? I have no reason to believe he doesn't. Nothing. I mean, he's not sitting publicly where he goes, I'm sick of this shit. But right. I would say all things considered, if he's wanting to continue to play, it would be the egregious decision of the decade to let that guy walk out the door.
You know, quarterbacks make $30 million. If you can keep him for $19 million and he's still a player,
exactly.
Hey,
that's somewhat of a bargain. Now he may drive his price up a little bit, but he doesn't have a whole lot of leverage at this point.
He doesn't have a whole lot of leverage. And hey, what if he still can play?
And that's the thing. I don't understand how he couldn't play if the Liz Frank, you know, Hollywood Brown, the receiver for Baltimore, he had this surgery back in January. He's played every game this year. He's played well. I mean, there's cases where it doesn't work out, but the foot is going to be everything here. If the foot goes well, it's a pretty much a no-brainer. But I don't think Tepper has a whole lot of time to factor Cam's availability here into who he hires next.
Into who he hires.
It's a little early in the game for me.
If the new guy doesn't want him, then you move on. I would hate to see Cam go win in Tampa Bay.
God, damn, or anywhere. God, in New Orleans, there's a rumor out there now about Sean Payton. Here's one more example. Some reporter said, he heard somebody say that Sean Payton really loves the way Lamar Jackson plays. So from that, they spin it into, could be a good landing spot for Cam Newton. And that turns into a Facebook headline.
What's crazy is, you know who else likes the way Lamar Jackson plays?
Yeah.
Bill Belichick.
Everybody.
Exactly.
Right. Except for Bill Polian. Bill Polian took a nice hot shit on him for the preseason, but he's no longer in the league.
At least he came back and said he was wrong.
Hey, you know what? That credit to the guy. And, you know, there's a lot of guys behind the scenes that probably had those awful takes on paper with their scouting reports because they're fixed in their ways. And that's been fun to watch, by the way. And that's why I keep looking at, you know, I don't know if Greg Roman would be the right guy in Carolina, but Harbaugh has those same principles offensively. I think if Cam is 99% where he was, man, they could do some dangerous things with what they do out there.
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see. So from that standpoint, I appreciate you making some time for us again. Luther Broughton, tight end, Carolina Panthers, back in the 90s, early 2000s. He played with Donovan McNabb. He played under John Gruden. John Gruden was one of his offensive assistants. Hey, how did that go for you?
John Gruden was the offensive coordinator in Philly. I hated him.
So what was so bad about Gruden at the time?
Gruden was an asshole. No, Gruden's an asshole. Gruden didn't coach me at all. And I got to the point where I was like, dude, what did I do?
Yeah.
Like, some guys would be like, what the hell did you do to Gruden? I'm like, I don't know. I'm a fucking rookie from Furman, and I'm about to quit because I think I'm the worst football player ever.
Yeah, that's, you know, maybe he learned from that. It sounds from you like he didn't. He's still got some of the same tendencies.
Well, he makes $10 million a year. He's won a Super Bowl. He ain't going to change because of Luther.
Oh, come on now. Hey, look, listen, that dance in the end zone against Roman Pfeiffer. Now, that's some shit right there.
No, that was dope. You got to make changes if you see some shit like that.
That's right. I love Ramil's face, too. He's staring at his defensive guys.
That might be the nicest guy you ever want to meet.
Dick Vermeil.
Have you ever met Dick Vermeil?
I've never met Dick Vermeil, no. I've met all your other guys. I met Dom, and I actually have met George. But Dick Vermeil, I've heard, is a world-class individual.
World-class, dude. So let me tell you what's funny. I remember everyone was going crazy. The New Year's Eve in 2000, we thought planes were going to fall out of the sky and all that shit.
Oh, the Y2K thing, yeah.
Y2K thing, right?
Right.
So we played the Rams. I was in Philly. We played the Rams. The Rams came to Philly. So the game was like on Sunday the 2nd or Sunday the 1st.
I remember this game.
And everybody flew in early because they were afraid of Y2K.
Everybody was freaked out, man.
So the guys were in town. Yep, those guys were in town. New Year's, the day before New Year's, they were a day early. We all hung out New Year's at Bobby Taylor's house and all types of good stuff. So when I went to pick those guys up, well, I went to hang out with Dexter McCleon. You know, Dexter's a Clemson guy. We were friends. And went to get Dexter. I pull up to their, they were at some restaurant in South Jersey, the whole team having a meal, and I go pick up Dexter. And I don't want to venture into their team event. First off, I'm a player from the other team. And secondly, you know how the NFL is. Everything is protected. You can't just be coming into these guys' meetings. No, a stranger can't come in. He doesn't know who I am. So I walk in, and then Dexter tells him who I was. And he was like, oh, Luther, come on in. And he said something to me, and he was like, hey, what do you want? And he was like, get this guy a plate and this, that, and the other. And and talking to me, like, and I'm like most coaches will be like, get this guy the hell out of here. Greedy would have kicked my ass out. but it's
all
like,
5 foot like, six of them, right?
Right. He's such a little, and people were, speaking of Gruden, people were talking about Jay Gruden. No, please no.
Oh, in Carolina?
Yes.
Are they? How did? No, hell no. What, no. No, fuck no. When did that start? I haven't heard that.
Oof. Dude, I saw it all. I guess it was one of the hot takers.
Oh, fuck that. Yeah, that's no. Jay, God almighty. Bill Callahan outcoached. Did you see what Callahan did on Sunday to Carolina? He just grounded, pounded their asses.
You know Bill Callahan was the O-line coach for Gruden in Philly, right?
Yeah, he was on that staff.
Well, not for Gruden, for Ray Rhodes. Oh, Bill.
That was a Bill Callahan type of game. That's he prides himself on 40 runs and pulling those guards and power football, man. Shoot. That was
he probably had full wood the whole second half.
Yeah. Rough. So yeah, we've covered the Carolina Panthers piece of, you know, what kind of happened and what transpired there. We talked about Harbaugh. Give me three or four names. I mean, again, we're just speculating here. It's been 2 days since Ron's out the door, but you know, we got to start thinking forward. What are some names out there that you'd like to see maybe take a shot?
Oh man,
come on,
man, you put me on the spot.
Let me
spitball. So
I'll edit this down, man. It's fine.
I'd like to see is Dabo's. No, I'm kidding.
well, a lot of people. I did a poll on that yesterday.
Dabo is a straight up college coach.
Yeah,
man.
No, you're not gonna do that. No,
he's not X and O's. So one name you came up with Greg Roman. Greg was on the staff. You know that, right?
Yeah, I was gonna mention that. Greg Roman
Greg
for 7 years.
He was
quality
was
control,
here.
Right? He coached
he's
you guys.
Quality control and assistant and a strength coach. He did a lot of everything. I don't know if he's ready to be a coach. I don't know. Yeah. I know he's doing a good job as a coordinator.
Right.
So Josh McDaniels is not going to get out of New England.
Would you want him to?
I think Josh is a good coach as long as he doesn't bring Tim Tebow with him.
Well, that would be a disappointment.
if the Steelers fans want to continue to piss all over Mike Tomlin, why don't we bring him in?
Oh, in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat,
right?
That swagger on the sidelines and getting that defense retooled, man, in a heartbeat.
So you know who else I like? I know it's a name that's not like everybody doesn't know and whatnot.
Jeff Fisher.
Matt Eberflus.
You know,
that's hilarious.
I mentioned Eberflus. No, thank you. Go ahead and talk about Matt a little bit. I'll give you the floor on this one.
No, man, Matt has he's not young, but he's in his 40s. He's a younger guy. He works with Reich. I know they do a lot with analytics there, if that's what Tepper wants. And right. His defense is flying around, man.
Yeah, I'm impressed. And I think Eberflus was the guy that was, when McDaniels kind of backpedaled off the Indy offer, Irsay and the company had already, Ballard, they already given him a contract. He came under the premise he's working for McDaniels.
No, he was working for McDaniels.
Yeah, right. So it all worked out for Indy. I mean, you know, Indy's struggling a little bit this year, but I mean, Andrew Luck quits. I mean,
well, that's what happens when your best player quits. Well, not
quits. How'd you feel about that?
Let's call it retired.
Let's talk about that. I mean, I wanted to get your take on that when it happened.
So sick of people trashing him that he quit. So a guy decides that he doesn't want to beat his body up anymore, and fans decide that he quit on the team. Yeah. You don't go into someone's job when you put your 2 weeks notice and I don't give you a hard time. Do you think that he woke up one morning and said, man, coach yelled at me yesterday, I'm tired of this, I quit?
No, he didn't.
He spent over a year out of football with injuries, came back, beat the hell up, and he decided that he wasn't going to do that to his body anymore. Would I be surprised if he came back in a year? Absolutely not.
I wouldn't be
surprised if he came back. But this guy is a Stanford grad. He came from money, so money's not the issue. He's made a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he has other things that he wants to do, and I am happy for him to be able to make that decision. I don't care if he was a Philadelphia Eagle. I would have been happy for him to go and do what you got to do with yourself and take care of your body. I don't care what the fans have to say.
Just to dovetail off that point there, and you played in the league, obviously, so you know – the pain, the rudimentary pain you deal with. I don't remember what specific injuries you dealt with over the years, but I know that Luck dealt with quite a few, and it was the kind of injuries that had him on pain medication, presumably, and it just ruined his quality of life. And what I don't like, the fans are going to be fans. That's fine. But credentialed, I still don't have a credential, by the way. Credentialed members of the media.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Oh, you know, make a call. They're trashing him. They're trashing him. I don't know who it was. It was like five or six.
What's his name? The basketball guy who said the Niners tight end can't block. Was he one of them?
Oh, Gottlieb. He's the worst.
Didn't he say something?
He said, yeah, he was on record. I don't know if it happened this week or it was an old clip, but I've watched film on San Francisco for two straight days this year to get prepped for this, you know, preview of the game. He was blocking like a goddamn animal.
He's a great blocker.
And he loves doing it.
There's no question that he's a great blocker, and he's been for a while.
That is such a
idea where he got that from.
He plays Madden. That's all he does. He plays Madden, and he sees him not blocking, and he just says, oh, Kittle doesn't block. He's fast.
Just because he's athletic doesn't mean he can't block.
Of course not. Some of the best blockers in the position. You were athletic. You were a good blocker. A lot of these guys.
I was a decent blocker.
You were elite. Come on now.
I was a decent blocker.
You had dog Let's shit beside like you on that. The line. You had to pick up the pieces, man. But the thing with Luck is, people would also throw this out too, and they're going to throw it out with Cam as well. This is the same fucking narrative. With Luck, it's, you know, he's got these interests off the field. And it makes
so
here,
what?
Here, but here's how they say it. Here, it's like a standard talking point. And that gotta makes you wonder right now, where's his head at with a game of football?
I don't understand. let me tell you, speaking of that, during training camp, you have to get something else to do because you're totally beat up. So the year 01 with Seaford, I decided I wanted to read Dean Smith's book. He would get so pissy when he'd see me with reading a book on the training table. I remember him saying something under his breath about guys not focusing on football, got other things. He said something one day, and I was like, is he fucking talking about me because I'm reading a fucking book?
So wait, back up here. So the head coach of the Panthers –
dude,
Super Bowl winning coach.
He wanted everything.
He's trolling through. He's trolling through the training room because he's a total control freak, and he sees you reading a Dean Smith book, and from that, he surmises he doesn't care about football enough.
He said something. He said That's something. Nuts. And then he mentioned it in the meeting. Guys need to I can't remember.
But this stuck with me
years later, and I was like, you gotta be kidding me. This guy is talking to me.
Yeah, just so everybody knows, Luke and I are talking here. These are memories from his past. We're not quoting anything that Seifert said. This is all just stuff, conjecture. But a lot of what Luther's talking about are things he was a part of and lived through. So I'm going to yield from putting words in George's mouth. But it sounds like from a lot of guys I've talked to, that was the common theme. And it's just a cautionary tale. Again, when you look for a guy, a lot of folks thought that about Ron Rivera. And you know why? Because he stood still on the sidelines. Well, you know who else does that? Bill Belichick.
Bill Belichick.
That doesn't mean a damn thing.
You know who else did that?
Yeah.
Tony Dungy, the man who didn't even swear.
Tom Landry did that.
Coach doesn't swear, and people think he's not fiery enough or whatever. And
what happens is the shit hits the fan, and fans don't know how to examine film and see what's going on, so they point to things like that. It's the standard thing, and ESPN drives
it's
it down.
It's the standard. I
tell you, we started this project right about the time we had you on the podcast first time. I was not a big Twitter user, man. I was Facebook and just, I got three kids and you have pictures of them and stuff. But I've been immersed in Twitter every day, just pushing the product out and getting the brand out there. And man, it's a cesspool at times. Jesus, you got to just Panthers Twitter in particular. There's some great folks out there, fan base wise. Now, the Panthers social team is outstanding, but the fan base, I guess it's this way everywhere. Man,
it's everywhere. It's just everywhere. I played in Philly.
What if Philly had Twitter back then?
It's freaking nuts. They will murder you.
Did you kind of like it, though?
I loved it.
And that, right. Everybody says that, man. I knew you'd say that.
I'm just telling you, I loved it.
Who didn't like it? Give me a teammate you played with in Philly. I know there's some guys that took some crap over the years. Was there anybody you played with there that just couldn't deal? And don't mention names.
I can't remember guys that couldn't deal.
Yeah.
Like, I remember me and Donovan were walking. It was halftime. It was we were walking together. And just talking about the last play of the half or something like that. And there were fans with really good seats. I'm talking about right next to us as we're walking in, right?
This is the vet or is this the link?
This is at the vet.
Nice.
So we get there, and dude is literally within reaching distance of Donovan. And he said, hey, Donovan, McNabb. And Donovan stops talking to me, looks over and says, what's up? He said, you fucking suck.
Jesus Christ.
And I'm talking about I could punch him in the face with that close. And Donovan just busted out laughing. He was like, oh, really? And we just looked at each other and started laughing again. Because it's like, now, they're nuts and they have a right to be passionate or whatnot.
Yeah, but not
certain
that's
times they cross the line. Like, I'm like, dude, you're literally like a step away from a guy who would beat the hell out of you if he really wanted to.
Well, and that's that guy's Super Bowl right there. That fan, that's his epic
totally.
Super Bowl win.
He's
that's
telling
his
that
moment.
Story.
That's his moment to shine. Dale, if he had social media back then, he'd be a superstar.
Oh, he would have recorded that.
In that moment, he was the guy. And I've been around you guys long enough, players. I played in high school, but never at your level. But I learned some fundamental things playing sports when I grew up. And it's just respect the game and respect those who play it. And you know what? Even if they're being paid some money, God almighty, are you that miserable in your life?
Are you that miserable? I say that all the time. Like, dude, are you miserable? Like, come on.
You get paid millions to do it. Somebody can't. I think it was JB Neller. Somebody told me, I ain't getting paid millions to do this.
Right.
Yeah.
Who are you talking to? I'm not getting paid millions.
Most of the guys don't.
I'm not complaining, but.
Yeah, I mean, you make a decent
millions, but
decent coin to play again.
Right. I say this all the time. I was in college last year. I'm not complaining, but I ain't making millions.
No, right. And the nature of the contracts, nature of the CBA, it's you're not guaranteed a thing. So you gotta stay healthy. You gotta perform, or else you got a backup plan. And you, by the way, do. You're a Furman grad, and you're a very, very intelligent young man who makes a good living for himself. I don't doubt we'll be up there sometime soon to chat with you, man. Luther Brown, former tight end.
Yeah,
Philly
give me
Eagles,
a buzz, man. Please do.
Carolina Panthers. He is the man. Spend some time with us today. Luther, I want to have you back soon, man. I really enjoyed the chatter and everything you bring to the table, man. Have a great afternoon, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Later, bro.